Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of Bars, the Black Atheist Radio Show. I am Blazer Pete, and joining us tonight will be Pete Smith and Wilbert Moore. They'll be joining us in a bit. If you haven't seen it already, our subject of discussion this evening will be internalized racism. You may also know it as self-hatred or coonery. Or perhaps being an Uncle Tom. I'm sure you've all seen recent examples in our news media. They may or may not be famous. Some might feel that there's coonery afoot when there are families of victims of police brutality, fatalities especially, rushing to the media to say that they forgive the police officers. Personally, I don't agree with that, but I am also of the opinion that forgiveness is not instrumental to the healing process, per se. Sure, it may help others, but one must ask, why forgive someone who will simply go back and do it again? Also this evening, we'd like you to call in and tell us about your experiences with the coons in your life. And that number will be 714-409-0586. That number again is 714-409-0586. 0586. Ladies and gentlemen, again, that number for you to call in and share your experiences with us, 714-409-0586. Joining us today, Pete Smith, a little bit more. How's it going this evening? Appears we're having a little bit of technical difficulties. In just a moment, and we will try and get them onto the show. Heather, you there? Yeah. Still having technical difficulties. It seems a bit of a pattern for us here at Bars, unfortunately.
Hello? That one time when you sent me the link through the email.
We're on.
So you were able to dial in?
Yes.
I think it's the first person who uses that pin.
Okay, but we should be on right now.
Rashawn?
Ladies and gentlemen, we apologize for the technical difficulties there. We will keep rolling. So joining me tonight is Pete Smith. And Khalil Haynes, good evening.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
All right.
So, I don't know about you guys, but I haven't really heard much, any big blips on the Coon radar, I guess you could say, lately. So, perhaps either of you may have found something recently.
Well, actually, yeah, like you said, we really haven't had to have many Coons say too much because, like, you have Donald Trump and them doing so much that everyone else kind of doesn't have a chance to say anything because, I mean, you know, they don't need to parade a black guy in front. They got a white guy all bold enough to do it now.
Yeah. Kind of picking up the slack.
Let me see if I can.
I can't think of anything recently where there's been any heavy-duty cooning. I mean, I'm sure there's been something low, so several low-level items that haven't hit the main news, but overall, I guess they all took the holiday off. Apparently Christmas is a big coon holiday.
They said they can't hear anything. I don't know what's going on, man.
That's sad. But you dialed in, though, right?
I did, and it said that it was joining me to the call.
I don't understand. They can't even hear you?
Yeah, they said they can't hear anything. Hold on, let me try it. Maybe I'm going to hang up and try and call back again. Okay, we should be back on the air now. We keep having technical difficulties with the radio right now.
Hopefully everything's solved.
Hopefully. Okay, well, first of all, maybe it would be important for us to define what we mean by cooning, because there are black people who will try to say that, well, it's racist because we're using a racist term, a term that white people did use for us racists. But we know that, you know, certain words can have different definitions depending on, you know, the person that it's coming from and also the intent. When we say something about, what we call a black person a coon, it's someone who's pandering to whiteness, a melanated upholder of white supremacy, someone who is bold and brazenly going against anything that would help black people to succeed in this, people who are just pandering to whiteness. And, it's such a detriment to our culture and our society to have these people that are parading and parroting the oppressor's words all the time, because it gives them ammo to just completely disregard any concern that we have, because they'll overlook a thousand of us crying, saying that we're hurting, because they'll find the one white black guy wrapped in a Confederate flag or something, you know. So it's completely it completely goes against any kind of forward movement. They're stifling, and they can be incredibly dangerous also to movements.
Well, they provide validation. You know, they the crap that you hear from racists and bigots and the like, you know, doesn't have any logical basis. So just sitting out there by itself, it seems more ridiculous. But if you can get a black face to parrot it, then that provides a type of validation that's normally only reserved for logical thinking and reasoning. So that makes it doubly dangerous.
Yeah.
It was interesting when Shai brought up Donald Trump. I mean, obviously he's, you know, over the top, sometimes mostly comically so. So I don't view him as nearly as dangerous as Ben Carson. Ben Carson literally kills me on a regular basis with the types of, I mean, it's one thing to have bad ideas. He actually parrots stereotypes. He actually reinforces some of the more ridiculous aspects of racial stereotyping and the kind of propaganda war that we fight against on a regular basis. He, to me, seems to be a very dangerous individual.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because they'll take someone that's like that and things that are meant to oppress us, things that will hurt us, that will harm us directly in our community. If you take someone like that who, you know, they're decorated as, you know, being this, you know, great surgeon, and people are saying how much they respect him, and he's supposed to be so accomplished, and they take him and parade him out in front, and that makes the majority of people be okay with the things that are doing that are incredibly detrimental to our way of life, I mean, literal lives, the things that are physically killing us. That's someone going and they're like just completely confirming, oh, this is okay, you know, the propaganda master, and they, you know, someone that they're just parroting out, you know, puppeting out in front of everyone so that they can just get away with all of the bullshit that they're doing, and dudes just going along with it for a pat on the head from Massa.
Yeah, I mean, I really understand the idea of a power grab. It's kind of the way that the country and the world works. But his danger for me comes from the fact that he is very accomplished. Mm-hmm. If you look at it just from the standpoint of one black man viewing the accomplishments of another black man, when I read about the things he's done in an operating room, the types of groundbreaking procedures he's developed, it makes me amazingly proud, you know, that a black man has been able to do that. I mean, we've always, you know, gone really hard in the medical field, especially with the history of racism in medicine. I really am always kind of really kind of encouraged when I see a melanated doctor or a researcher or anyone, you know, in those general fields making moves like he does. Generally, he would be the type of person I would be very proud of and would even, you know, suggest that my sons or other, you know, young men and women follow his lead. But Jesus, he's over the top with some of the stuff he says. I mean, grain silos? Seriously?
No,
I mean,
more dangerous than grain silos was, you know, suggesting that universal health care was worse than slavery.
That was also ridiculous.
That was, I was completely flabbergasted. I've heard of coning, but God damn. I mean, that was so over the top. This like puts me in, this is where I'm speechless about it, like that anyone could compare the fact that people are going to get insurance and maybe possibly it affecting the economy a little bit to the chattel slavery of last like thousands of years. That I don't understand how someone can, you know, in their mind even form their lips to say some bullshit like that. Like, that's a sick individual, and like you said, that's dangerous.
And also, just found this article here where he is quoted speaking on the Black Lives Matter movement, and he says, whereas foisting yourself on people, just talking about Black Lives Matter, on people, rather than engaging in dialogue and bullying in people, I've never liked the idea of bullying on behalf of anybody.
Wow.
Basically, we don't have anything to say. We're just forcing ourselves on people. And like they say with the LGBTQIA movement, we're shoving ourselves down their throats, basically.
I mean, I imagine the guilt must be tough, but that's not really our problem. You know, I know it's tough to hear the message, but you guys refuse to do anything about it. Everyone just wants to kind of act like it never happened and sweep all this under the rug. It's too big to sweep under rugs, guys. So, yeah, you're going to hear about it. You know, it's not bullying. It's like almost like screaming for attention. They will, you know, throw some ridiculous story in the news and it'll catch headlines and, you know, the murders of young men will be pushed to the back pages instantaneously. So someone has to step up and keep that message in the news. I'm really proud of the BLM movement.
But, of course, because of the fact that Black Lives Matter is shining a light on Black lives, and, you know, that's, you know, always going to be the goal to, you know, keep the niggas quiet. You know, and because of the fact that you have all these Black people coming forward and they're saying how oppressed they are, like I said, white people, the white moderate, are going to look for, you know, validation in that one Black person that has something to say. They will ignore an entire crowd of people because they saw one YouTube video of guy. But then you take decorated surgeon Ben Carson getting up there and speaking against Black lives mattering. What the whole fuck? You know, like, your Black ass matters. You really don't like that. That bothers you that we saying that your Black ass matters too. But, you know, it's really disgusting and it's really harmful to any change. Anybody who believes in this ideal of convincing white America of our humanity or of trying to, you know, appeal to their logic and their emotion and anything, then you have to understand how counterintuitive that is to have someone like that going against you, because they're not going to feel for you when they have this person who is selling this bootstraps dream telling them, oh no, they're lying, ignore them, they just lazy. That's some bullshit. That will never, that is something that will keep that from ever happening. And coons are always going to exist.
Yeah. If you think about it, it's really against the oath he took as a doctor to not care about the lives of, forget, not just your own people, but people in general. The fact that it's happening, I mean, he should be all over it as a former surgeon. Wasn't he a surgeon general previously?
I don't think so.
But as a doctor as learned as he is, obviously he sees that it's a significant issue to have this sort of violence happen against a segment of the population. You could certainly treat that as a medical problem. He should be all over that. The last thing he should be doing is kind of sweeping it under the rug and acting like it's a bullying situation. We're bringing up something that's insignificant. It's murder. It's wholesale killing. It's a genocide happening right under your nose. And I don't see how you're not all over that as a doctor, as a medical professional, as someone sworn to keep people alive.
Well, yeah, you see, the thing is with that, and I'm going to tell you from working around medicine and stuff, doctors really don't give a fuck as much as they should. But and two, he worked on the brain. He didn't really understand what went on inside, so to speak. You know, he was a neurosurgeon, not a psychologist, and I don't think he cares about that, because you have to kind of, you know, go in depth of people's psyche. And if you actually kind of looked into the different psychological traumas that Black people have to go through daily, then there's no way that you can come to the conclusions that he did. So that just goes to show that just because, you know, you're proficient in one area, that doesn't mean that you're in any way smart in other ones. That doesn't quantify the shit that you say, because he says some of the most ridiculous nonsense to be an accomplished neurosurgeon. You know, he works on brains, but his doesn't function in all areas.
You could say that again.
Yeah.
I just mean from a caring standpoint. He was a doctor before he was a surgeon. You have to be. So he knows about that part of it where your first job is to make sure people stay alive, regardless of cost, regardless of the challenge to you. That's supposed to be what it's all about. It's supposed to be a profession and not a job. But I can understand where, you know, the idea of him just being more of a scientist. It doesn't have to be a coon scientist, though. That's unnecessary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's the exceptional Negro that Carter G. Woodson
spoke of way back in the 1800s, and nothing's changed. That's why I said coons are going to be here. They feel like the higher that they get up, the more accomplished they are, the more that their color doesn't matter, the more that they're accepted by white America, and the more they'll push to be more and more accepted, the more that they'll just, you know, push to be able to, you know, them to be the special one. You know, everyone wants to be the special snowflake. And, you know, you're not like those other black people. There's some Negroes that actually like when people say that to them, you know. So it's just a big part of white supremacy. It's, white supremacy has made it where whiteness is so valued, where whiteness is so much something that you want to attain. That's why bleaching creams exist, and, you know, you have these people with these beautiful melanated hues. I mean, deep, beautiful skin, like Densia from Cameroon. That woman had the most beautiful golden brown tone, and now she's pink because they don't look white when they get done. She looks pink now. So, It's really sick. It's created a real sickness in us. I think we all pretty much suffer from some form of PTSD, and by and large, a lot of us Stockholm syndrome, that's making us where we're looking towards these people that are so abusive to us, and that the society that demeans us so, we're, you know, reaching out towards that. We want that. We want to attain that and be accepted into that, and we never will. They're never going to actually accept us in their system. They'll just, you know, include us where we're not bothering them. And they don't really, you know, a lot of us don't really get that because, you know, the illusion is so thick there.
It's part delusion, too. I mean, he may want to be a special Negro, but as a professional myself, I know for a fact they never actually accept you. You know, you can help them make all the money they like, but you're never really considered a part of things in the way others are, you know, just by the color of their skin. So
mm-hmm.
It's deep.
It really is deep. I used to be a little bit more sympathetic to the coons, you know, like, oh, well, they don't know, because a lot of them. Hi, is that Wilbert?
Yes.
Hi, Wilbert. Wilbert.
Hello, Heather.
All right. So we have Wilbert on the line. Wilbert Cordell Kaiser Moore.
Yes.
And he is our resident coon whisperer. He has markedly more patience with them than I do, which I do believe that a great deal of them just need the education. But, you know, their detriment kind of makes me where I'm like, you know, kind of like, no, fuck y'all. So, Wilbert, can you kind of give us your opinion on cloning in 2016?
A lot of it has to do with the psychology of being a part of a race that is socially deemed lesser in just about every aspect of our society, and white people being considered the superior race in just about every aspect of our society, from their representation, from the way wealth is distributed, etc. So a lot of times it's just about actually convincing coons that they, as black people, have value despite what our society has told them. Because a lot of them genuinely believe that black people don't really have value, and they receive most of their opportunities from white people. So when all of your opportunities come from white people, when your employer is white, when the people rent to you are white, and you're getting your housing, your money, your cars, your food, everything is coming from a white-owned institution, it's basic psychology to, at some point, pander to that demographic in order to try to elevate yourself and give yourself more status. It's, a lot of them think that by by prioritizing their blackness and by really seeing value in black people, they're putting themselves in a negative position because of how society has been set up. It's not a lot that black people can do for them. Like, they're, a lot of times they're cooning for their own self-preservation because, like, say somebody like Charles Barkley, his boss is white. He is on a white-owned TV station. Everything that he got is a result of something a white person gave him. So it's more financially beneficial to him to pander to white people. Whereas if he did start speaking out for black people and saying what we all know is true about the black experience in America, there's really black people have not been set up in our society to have power. We haven't been set up in a position where we can provide opportunities for other black people in most cases. So a lot of them really just see it as it's not beneficial to stand up for black people when black people can't give them any opportunities that will compare or override the opportunities they're getting from white people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, it's the side effects of white supremacy and, you know, us seeing whiteness as something to be attained, you know, something that's constantly in our face that, you know, it's like that's the archetype for what's great. Even though, you know, that's
right.
Nonsense, obviously. And so they're just trying to get as close to that as possible and try to just, you know, mesh into that society. And I don't know if no one told them that that doesn't work. I mean, they might be comfortable around you a little bit, but, you know, when you leave, you're still a nigga.
Exactly. And that's the thing that a lot of them don't really understand, or they choose to ignore. They think that by pandering to white people, eventually they'll be accepted into whiteness. They think that by saying, well, you know, I'm not like the other niggas and all the other black people are terrible and I agree with everything you say about black people, but I'm not like them, so accept me. And they think that if they do that long enough, eventually white people will accept them. And the fact of the matter still remains that at the end of the day, they see you the same way they see every other black person on the planet. The only difference is you're doing something that's making them money.
Absolutely.
So, like, if you, I don't know how many of you guys really listen to Lauryn Hill as far as, like, interviews and stuff, not beyond just the music, but actually listen to her speak. But she's talked a lot over the years about how white people try to control black artists. And if they start losing their control over black artists, then they take away their opportunities. That's what they did to her. When she stopped just doing and saying what white people wanted her to do and say, you stopped seeing Lauryn Hill on TV. It, like, happened overnight. They started saying she was crazy and all of that. But the thing is, that's not just something that happens in the music industry or in the arts. That happens in every aspect of our society, even in just basic jobs. Like, if you go into work at, let's say, Subway, and you are just a respectable Negro through and through, then you're going to keep your job. It's not going to be an issue. But if you go on Facebook or somewhere where people can see you publicly and you talk bad about white supremacy or how you don't really fuck with white people like that or something like that, if you are publicly linked to your place of employment, like if you have on your Facebook page that you work at Subway and you're on Facebook saying fuck white people, you can end up losing your job. They can take that opportunity away from you because you're not being the respectable Negro they expect you to be.
Right. Absolutely. I'm going to tell you, honestly, when I really decided to be a lot more radical and everything, I had to make sure it was when I was in position to where I didn't have to worry about a white person cutting my paycheck. And, you know, that's
That's the reality of it. Khalil and I were actually just discussing this, that, you know, in order to be a radical and be able to speak out on all these different injustices, it's really sick that in order for you to even be able to speak out against what's hurting you and your people, you have to be able to be in a position where if all of that gets compromised, if you lose your job, if, you know, you have to take off a couple of days to, you know, go out in a protest or something, you know what I mean? Like, you are really putting your livelihood at risk. You know, that job that you might have been there for a couple of years or so, and, you know, you got some seniority. And, like, I think this is what he was telling me earlier. It's the system that white supremacy and capitalism has created has made itself where it's we're so dependent on whiteness that it's hard to speak up and speak out against it. But like, even for me, even if you're afraid to speak up and speak out against it, don't be like such a coward and so afraid of it that you try to silence the other people that aren't afraid. That pisses
right.
me off. If you're not going to say anything, okay, sit there and be quiet. If you're scared, be scared with your mouth closed. But when you have the ones that are going against them, Black Lives Matter, y'all in the way and y'all causing problems for me, sit your ass down. You know, you don't have to do all of that.
Yeah, don't be extra with it.
Right.
A lot of it is rooted in their fear. Like, they're really scared of what white people will do to them. So they have to speak out and say, you know, hey, white folks, I'm on your side, because they think that something's going to happen to them if white people think that they think their lives have value. Because at the end of the day, that's all Black Lives Matter is saying. That's what those three words put together mean, that Black lives have value. And mm-hmm. it's really sick that we live in a society where if you say, hey, a life that belongs to a Black person has value, and that is a controversial statement. Like, that's something that's worthy of debates and, like, CNN interviews, and do we really believe this? We live in a society where Black people are so devalued that simply saying we have value is cause for concern. So
right.
when you're growing up in a society like that, at some point, it's a lot of people who start believing it. And that's where coons come from. They start believing that Black people don't have value. And they think that they have to, you know, be accepted by white people so that they can be valued. And some of them just take it too far. Like Raven Simone, who she has no reason why she needs to be cooning as hard as she's cooning.
No.
But it's like she just wants to. Like, she just wants to get on national TV Monday through Friday and say that Black people are trash and try to justify it with terrible logic. And it's like,
horrible.
If I could ask you a question, do you think that there may be people who perhaps are aware of these issues? They're socially aware. They're awoke, so to speak, but they coon, they cake for white supremacy because they see that there's a potential revenue stream from that they can profit from it personally.
Oh, of course.
Absolutely.
Of course.
And it's proven, like, when the thing happened in McKinney with the police officer putting his knee in the little girl's back, a local radio host there, like a regular internet show, he decided to come out and say, you know, he supported the cop and little Black girls need their ass beat and all of that. And as soon as he said that, CNN called him. Like, I don't even think he uploaded the video before he got the call. All he had to do was say it in front of a camera, and they were ready to pay him money. Because they look for Black people to reinforce their already established stereotypes about Black people. So it is a revenue stream. Unfortunately, it's actually a business in cooning. Like Tommy Sotomayor, for example, he has proven that by being a Black person and speaking negatively about Black people, you can create a career out of that. because we live in such an anti-black society that white people will pay you if you are speaking negatively about black people because you're reinforcing the beliefs that they already have. And what cooning really does is it empowers them to do more things to black people. For example, like if a cop kills a black kid and they say that the black kid was a criminal and violent and they were in danger, most people don't have to know any other detail about what happened. They will immediately believe the police officer because we have a society that's already indoctrinated everyone to believe that black people are criminals and black people are violent. So even if it's a kid, even if it's an 11-year-old, they will rationalize it as that child was violent and deserved to die because they were black, because every part of our society is reinforcing that belief. And not only is it white people reinforcing their beliefs, but it's the coons that are getting paid to do it. So when you see white people saying that black people are trash, and then you have black people getting on national TV saying, yeah, black people are trash, that sparks something in people's minds to where they're just like, okay, I guess they are. So I guess every black person that's ever been killed by a police officer deserves it. And a lot of them don't even think that what they're saying is racist when they say shit like that, because it's so ingrained in our society to think that that's normal. They don't think that there's anything wrong with saying that every black kid that's ever been killed by a police officer deserved it. They can't think of one that didn't deserve it.
Right. You know, the propaganda's been pushed so heavily on our to pretty much, you know, go against our own interests, especially since the 60s with the whole Black Power movement, where you had droves of black people, you know, loving blackness, you know. But now, since then, they've kind of, you know, this whole idea of integration and, you know, it's different now. You can't think that way. And, you know, like this aversion to nationalism and everything. It's like, it's really sick. They propaganda did that. They 100% planned that, because now, despite the fact that, you know, they've just changed appearances now, you know, it's just not as overt as it used to be. We're just not in the blatancy of Jim Crow, but we're still being hurt. But now, because of that, they're telling us, you know, that, you know, things are different now. You can't complain. Don't say anything. Don't rock the boat. You know, they make it so much more profitable to keep it, you know, where it's not that way, because, you know, whiteness runs the world right now. The powers in the world, the people that control everything, run everything on capitalism, and black people don't have capital. We don't have that money. We don't have that Jewish or white money. That's just not what we have. We don't have those same connections. And so they use that as a tool to keep us suppressed, because we're always looking towards that. You know, us living in a capitalistic society, it makes us put value on the commas in our bank account. We're trying to, you know, attain to this image that they've put in front of us, that that's what it is that we need to climb to get to. And they're putting it in our mind that, no, you can get there, it's fine. Oh, no, you can get there, but you have to work. That whole bootstraps crap, you know, and but not, you know, actually pointing out the fact that, you know, they put all of these different obstacles in front of black people purposely. And then despite you have all of these things that are set up to make us fail, then they'll find the one coon that made it through this system that they have set up to only let a few through. They'll get him and parade him in front and say, see, look, he did it. The rest of them are just lazy. The rest of them, they're just not doing anything. They're being, you know, normal like black people do. That's just what they do. And, you know, and parading the exceptional one in front and everybody. And it's really sick. It's going to take so much propaganda, you know, counter propaganda in order to break that, because the entire perspective of black people about black people is pretty skewed. It's pretty hard
to get black people to just love blackness, you know, to understand that we have our own culture and that we don't have to be ashamed of any part of it. Even the parts that are funny, what we think is ratchet or ghetto is thugged out or whatever, we don't have to be ashamed of ourselves. We don't have to be ashamed of slavery. We don't have to be ashamed of any parts of us. We don't have to pander to whiteness. There are enough of us that right now we can support each other to help to build each other up. Of course, you know, we live in a capitalistic society. If you want to survive in this, then yeah, I know a lot of y'all got to play the game. I get it. But like I mentioned before, just stay out of the way of those of us that are trying to, you know, make it better, make it easier so that that climb for you don't have to be so fucking hard, you know? Like, don't come against us. Don't fight against the black people that are fighting for black people. You're black. We including you in this, you know? Don't fight against us. It's pretty hard to see black people so anti-black, so hating ourselves, you know, and knowing how planned this was, it really sucks.
Right.
And can we spread it around a little bit? Whatever, Rashad.
Oh, no, I was asking for your thoughts.
I know you guys have made the point earlier about propaganda and obviously the system of economic disadvantage that all people of color suffer under. I think it's important to remember and kind of recognize that most of the coon type behavior we deal with comes from people that do not profit off of it. They do have economic concerns, certainly. You know, you got to feed your kids, you got to keep a roof over your family's house. So there's some real issues there. I think a large part of it comes from a simple lack of education. I sometimes interact with older black people who, you know, they've lived through some seriously challenging times going up through the 50s and 60s. And you'll see in the day, and they'll talk about something like, say, black-on-black crime. They will live in cities where black-on-black crime occurs. And you'll hear them say things like, I wish we would stop killing each other, and I wish it was, you know, and we could just stop murdering ourselves, maybe we can move forward, those kind of regular kind of coonish type statements that you hear people like in your family make and people sitting on the bus with you make and kind of those close interactions. A lot of that just simply comes from a lack of education. A lot of people don't understand the numbers behind murders. You know, they don't realize that it's mathematically impossible for the murders that we commit against each other to be the reason that we have the problems that we do. You know, I think if we could find a way to, you know, start to educate our people just in the streets, kind of a grassroots effort about, you know, what it really means to be black, what blackness entails, the kind of problems that come with living in an oppressive society, in a capitalistic society, and, you know, recognizing that, yeah, you're going to have individuals who may do certain things that you may not be proud of as, you know, a member of your race, but in a wholesale way, it really doesn't represent your race. We got to get that message out there because I have people like, you know, being honest, like my mom will make statements like that, you know, and she lives in a city where obviously if we were killing people that much, we'd be walking around empty streets. There's just not enough dead bodies for all the crime that they say we commit. But nevertheless, over and over on a regular basis, you hear even our own people repeating things that just kind of sound good to them, sound like they could be right. No one has done the actual math. No one has actually researched it. We got to get that information out there to help really combat that propaganda on a deeper level.
Mhm. Absolutely.
And we have a caller on the air, a caller calling in.
Hello,
you doing,
caller.
You're on the air.
Oh, hello. It's Cassine.
Hello, Cassine.
Hello. I've been listening and whatever. I actually missed a little bit in the beginning because I had to go to the store. But I mean, I agree with everything what everyone's saying. I mean, it's just a lot, and it's really heartbreaking to see people hate themselves so much and hate just getting there in. Like, it's really disturbing. Pardon me, it's thrown outside. It's disheartening to see them actually agree with that foolishness, pardon the children. It's saddening to see it. I mean, I actually was speaking to a coworker of mine at work about it. And while speaking to him, he continued to, you know, try to bring up black-on-black crime and he grew up in the hood, and, you know, if he didn't know these people, you know, they would rob him blind, and would I feel safe going to their hood? I shouldn't. I'm like, that has nothing to do with what's happening to us and how we're treating ourselves. And the view that you have, you're holding right now is an issue. The view that you're holding that, you know, we're somehow deserving of this, when none of this is our fault.
Mm-hmm.
We did not take ourselves from another continent across the world and bring ourselves here. We did not subject ourselves to these things. I was like, we have a foot on our necks, and we're trying to squeeze out from under it. And he continued to try to, you know, bring up, well, we do this and we harm each other. Yes, we do. But I was like, so does every other race on earth. I was like, you live around people that usually look like you.
Mm-hmm.
And you trying to use that, I was like, is the same thing that white people use to justify harming us. I was like, you're pandering to us. You're sitting there and pretty much giving them justified reasons, saying, well, you know what, this one agrees with us. So it's okay that we think this way. It's okay that we're okay with this. And it's not. It's not fine. It's not okay. It's not acceptable. It's totally unacceptable.
Kasima, if I could ask you, what is your typical response to somebody who engages in that self-hating ideology?
I try my best to explain to them that it's not our fault that we're in the position that we're in. Yes, sometimes we do things that may not be the best thing, but most of the time we have no other choice. We don't have the privileges and the opportunities that other people are granted. We don't have these opportunities. We're not given them. You know, the rare off occurrence that we are, it's probably because we are pandering to them. Or they may want to use us as propaganda against us. They want to use us as negative propaganda. We can't talk about, there's nothing about we need to respect ourselves to respect us. That's foolishness. There's nothing for us to respect. They need to respect us because we are people.
Absolutely.
This country is built on the blood of dead people.
Mm-hmm.
From the ground up.
Right. I think that's one thing, that's one problem that we have, is that people don't have that reality of the fact of how many black people died for us to be where it is that we are now, and we still haven't gotten there. It's like when we read about it, it's almost as if it's some sort of distant fairy tale. We're like disillusioned from the fact that these are actual human beings like me and you, how we are present. These people, they lived and existed through these things. I don't understand how anyone can, justify that, or, you know, not even realize the fact that, you know, in a different time, that would literally be your black ass, you know?
It's not that far removed from us. That's what people understand.
Mm-hmm.
It's 140 years ago. That's your great-great-grandparent.
Mm-hmm.
That's your grandmother and your grandfather's grandparent.
Mm-hmm.
People don't understand it. That is your grandparent's grandparent. It's not that long ago. It's
really
not like it was, you know, it's not thousands of years ago. It's a few generations back, literally.
And then even sooner, Jim Crow. Jim Crow was just as terrible. I mean, that's hostile. I mean,
it was a generation before us.
Right. You know, our parents were born during that time. So, I mean, I don't understand how anyone can not really see the person.
My mother told me horror stories. My mother told me horror stories of being called racial slurs in primary school. As a child, in elementary school, primary school, being called names. It's not like, you know,
remember.
All these people have to do is to ask their parents, their grandparents, what was it like when you were growing up?
Mm-hmm. What were you saying, Rashad?
I was saying that I remember going to a church in Chicago once and listening to the pastor as he described an experience where he was with his mother at a bus station that was segregated, and he wandered off and basically wandered off into the white side of the bus station and somehow found his way into the back. And once he got into the back, he found two lynched bodies sitting on the ground. And that was jarring. That was jarring. And that's not the first time I've heard it. I also have a friend whose grandmother told me a similar story of her out playing and finding randomly mutilated dead black bodies out in the field. And it's crazy to have to hear that. And then on the flip side, you're hearing all these angry white people telling you, well, that was so long ago, get over it.
And all those people that were involved are alive and well.
Yeah, some of these people are still alive and well. Many of them still are.
It's our coworkers' parents. People that we see, it's our coworkers' parents.
Right. Absolutely. The people that we interact with. Now, I just find it amazing that we have all of these photographs with these droves of people gathered around burning and hanging black bodies, but everyone claims that their family had no involvement in it. You can't find one of them that'll admit it, hardly.
Exactly.
And we have black people that, you know, are acting like, you know, like completely in denial concerning that, acting as if, you know, Jim Crow was in the 1400s or something. You know, it's really sick. It's really counterintuitive. Where, you know, it's hard when you have to fight against white supremacy and your people also. You know, you gotta always keep a watch on your back. It's always a coon always infiltrates everybody's movements. So those of us that are, you know, radicals that are going out, that are speaking, and we're trying to be activists, you really have to be careful of your social circles, because that's what I mean by coons being dangerous, because these people that are pandering to white supremacy will actually literally work for white supremacy and literally work towards killing you or destroying you. Any movement that you have forward, they will be, you know, plotting with, you know, with the people who are trying to oppose you. They'll be plotting with the enemy. We have to, it's that much of a detriment that, and it's really disgusting to be where you're trying to physically help someone and you have someone that looks just like you that would be included in that help that is literally fighting against you. That's a hard fight to fight.
I would say people don't think about it. You think about it, it's literally a war. You think about it. What did a lot of these, in like the, you know, the First Second World War, what did they do? They got people who you know, if they wanted to put a spy in Germany, they got someone whose parents were German, so they knew German, so they would sit in.
Mm-hmm.
So they wouldn't take a second notice to them. They're not realizing, people aren't realizing that's what you're doing. That's exactly who you are right now. You are a legitimate spy.
Right.
You're a legitimate spy, like you're a legitimate detriment. You are what's hurting us the most because you're right here and you're standing by me plotting.
They're more effective in reinforcing negative stereotypes about black people than white people can be, because they have a perceived better understanding of the black experience for being black people. So if white people all day say that, you know, black people are criminals and black people deserve death and all of that, then that's expected to an extent given the history of white people in this country. But when a black person stands up and says the same things, then that makes people think, oh, it must be true, because even a black person thinks that black people are criminals. Like, there's a different level of, there's a different power dynamic in speaking about a demographic when you belong to that demographic than speaking about it when you don't. Like, if you're black and you say that black people are criminals, more people will pay attention to what you just said than if a white person said it. Like, that's why if a black person is saying that, you know, black people are criminals, et cetera, they get on TV quick. Every station is trying to get them to say that on their channel, because it's going to get a lot more attention if a black person is saying it than just white people
right.
who we expect to say it.
They're reinforcing
like,
it. It's like, it's not just me saying it and my family saying, but look, here goes one of the little niggas saying it. They're saying it too, so it must be true.
Right, so they can say, you know, hey, look, I got a black friend, and he think y'all ain't shit either. So, and that's why people like Raymond Simone and Charles Barkley, Ben Carson, they're so dangerous because they have a different level of influence than the basic white racists. In that, for a lot of people, even for black people, they're more willing to listen to things either from a white person or from a white supremacist black person. And if it's coming from somebody that looks like them, there's certain black people in this country who will probably take that as more of a grain of salt. Like, if a black person who already is uneducated about the actual effects of white supremacy and how this really affects black people in this country, if they see Charles Barkley on TV saying that, you know, black kids are criminals anyway and, you know, black on black crime, blah, 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 and he looks like them, they're going to think, well, maybe black people are the problem. So Charles Barkley, in being a white supremacist, he affects white opinions more, but he also affects more black opinions. And what's dangerous is that when he affects more black opinions to become coons, then that's more black people who have that social influence. And when they say negative things about black people, it's reinforced a lot stronger than just the common racists who we expect to say negative things.
I think that they're raising their children in their family, like they're influencing their family and their children. And to let them think that these type of things are okay to say and okay to believe. Like, and it's not. And it's really sad. Like, my coworker got irritated, and we were talking about another coworker. He was talking about his hair, and he was like, if he wants to get the job, he has to cut his locks off. I'm like, no, he doesn't. He was like, they're not professional. Like, why aren't they professional? I'm like, there's nothing wrong with his hair. It's like, his hair is his hair. It's his hair, and it's natural. There's nothing wrong with that man's hair. Well, it sounds like it has
absolutely
nothing to do with
not.
Any kind of professionalism. It has nothing to do with that. I don't think he's qualified. I think that in itself is an issue. I don't think our hair is not qualified, but you can get, I was like, the same length of hair, you can get a white person doing, they'll get the job.
Right.
Like,
it's
not okay, and you're reinforcing it, and you're giving them the exact reinforcement that they need and the exact type of positivity that they want, and to use that phrase, that they want the kind of positivity that they need to let this flourish.
So let's talk about solutions. What is it that we can do to get people to, you know, stop cooning to counter against, you know, the people that are coming forward and saying these horrible things in black skin, you know, what, how can we move forward from this?
Well, I think first off, you have to, yes, education is the key. I think, first off, you got to hit them with facts. You got to hit them with facts. I mean, they keep saying black-on-black crime, and I keep seeing it. People keep throwing out that 85% of murders by black people are of other black people. Okay, well, the rate is roughly the same for white people.
Mm-hmm.
People don't know that. The rate for murders are the same amongst whites and blacks, regardless of the race of the victim. People don't know that. And then they also don't know
that
these crimes are six times more likely to end up on the news. They don't know that. And then they don't know that other crimes, like white collar crimes, that's almost entirely all white people. They don't see that rape or child rape, molestation.
Mm-hmm.
Those things are like almost entirely white people. It's dominated by white people. The assailants are white people. And then studies go out to bear again that not only are they killing people at the same rate as us, but they're also more likely to kill their family members. They're more likely to kill their spouses. They're more likely to kill children and the elderly.
Students. The school
shooters,
the face of domestic terrorism in America is a white man.
A young one,
exactly.
Right, and not even like the redneck happy with gun kind. It's the like the young man from Santa Barbara, affluent, very privileged, and pretty much jacked up on testosterone and feeling themselves. Though that's what it is. That's where the real fear is. But propaganda is effective.
I was going to say, my favorite thing to bring up would be that people tend to forget that people live around people that look like them 90% of the time. And not only that, but even if you don't, you know people that look like you. You know your family. You know your family friends. They tend to look like you.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to know their acquaintances,
right,
or you're going to meet their acquaintances. Those people tend to look like you. And I tried to meet my coworker. I was like, say black on black crime. I was like, but why is it not called white on white crime? White people do it. It's just called crime.
White people
There's
are at fault for everything. It's like, you
right,
know,
but I was,
neutral
yeah.
color is, you know, white or flesh.
Exactly.
You know,
I tried
like
to bring it up.
Weird
I was like,
pink.
Right. It's hilarious because I'm just like, you bring this up. I'm like, but Asian on Asian crime, you hear nothing about it. I was like, the Yakuza is one of the most violent gangs on earth. I did. And I thought to my coworker, he just kind of looked at me like, well, we need to. I was like, no. He was like, but you bring up other people. I was like, because you're bringing down black people. I'm sorry. I was like, but humans kind of have humans do what humans do. That's not
mm-hmm.
going to change based on race. There are going to be humans
right.
that kill.
Right.
But people tend
I
to
think
live around people that
on
look
another
like
show,
that.
I had mentioned that black on black crime, these types of things, that doesn't necessarily exist. It's called proximal crime. People who live next to each other typically do crap to each other. That's just the way that it happens. You don't normally see a dude from Watts going to Beverly Hills and breaking in a house. Most likely it'll be another house right there in Watts. You know, they that's just
right.
usually the way that works. You know,
well,
so
they made a movie about it. They made a movie
what were you
about
saying,
it.
Khalil?
I'm saying that's definitely part of the message, as Rashad was saying, even that, you know, we have to get out of there. The math is clear on black crime. That should be one of the easier facts that, you know, really any black person should be able to repeat that, you know, instantly. Obviously, you know, people have difficulty with mathematic concepts, but, you know, it's something that we should be able to share along with the idea that most crimes are economic. So when you are looking at high rates of crime in black neighborhoods or in black cities, it's because of the economic disadvantage that we live under. You know, so even as our own people, as we look at each other, we don't look at each other and say, oh, why did you, you know, steal that loaf of bread? You're such a bad person. You say, well, why did you steal that loaf of bread? You must be hungry, you know, and have more sympathy for the types of, again, most crime. I mean, I know murder gets all the big news. Most crime is economic. Most crime is stealing stuff from other people, by far. I mean, like 90% of crime is just stealing things from other people. So when we feel we're in neighborhoods that are dangerous or neighborhoods that have high crime rates, it's all about the economics. If you provide the economic guarantee, most of that crime goes away. Again, the math is clear on that. We got to get that message out there that it's not us, as Christine was saying. You know, our caller came on and gave us some great stuff. You know, it's just an effect that you're seeing. It's not some sort of cause. We're not something to be feared. We're not a problem to be solved. The problem to be solved is the racial oppression, which is enabled through economic disadvantages that we all suffer through. If we can address that, I guarantee we can fix it.
So, yeah, it's really bad. Like, it's to the point where I actually went to high school with someone, and she literally had lost her job because they were not paying her enough where she couldn't afford things. She needed food. She couldn't afford it after paying her rent and paying her car insurance and making sure she had a roof overhead and a car to get to work, that she had to steal food and sanitary napkins.
Mm-hmm.
Basic things.
Absolutely. You know, it's been proven the length that people will go to when you put them in a hostile environment. And so if you take someone and you put them where, like you said, they're struggling to meet ends meet, they're not able to get a job, they don't have an education, and if they do have one, it's pretty much subpar. The jobs in the neighborhood don't belong to anybody black. And, you know, when other people come into our neighborhoods, they bring their families and stuff in. They don't hire us. So you have all of these different odds that are going against you. You have constant propaganda. You have policing where people are constantly profiling you. It's a hostile environment. You have to figure out some kind of way to, you know, operate in that, how to live, to make sure that you eat, that you're clothed, that you have a roof over your head, that, you know, when it's freezing outside,
you have
some amount of heat, you know, right, you need to have running water, you know, different things. And that's a hostile way to live, and that's a reality. I think those of us who grew up in more of a suburban lifestyle, those that grew up where, you know, we live next door to a white person or something like that. I lived in a mixed neighborhood and everything. But were you paying attention to all that your parents had to do to make you guys stay in that neighborhood? You know, because
right.
most of us, our parents, both of the parents were working hard to keep us in those places. You know, speaking from me and knowing my different friends that were around there, they didn't have it as easy as Billy and Jane down the street, because Billy and Jane's dad had a salary. Mom stayed at home with them and stuff. The system is built to help Billy and Jane parents. Your parents have to work five times as hard as Gunther and them, you know? So,
right, two or three jobs per parent.
Right. So I think part of that is that we have those of us that grew up in the more middle class and actually not even realizing that we aren't really middle class here. We're working class. We're in that, and because of the fact that we have a house, you know, with a couple of bedrooms and our neighbors are white, now we think that we made it and the people that are in the ghetto just want to be there. No, dear, it's a system. We become so disillusioned.
That's generational. Mm-hmm. People don't realize that some of those houses in the ghetto that are falling apart, those kids are going to inherit that from their parents because their parents inherited that.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to inherit a mortgage that their parents and their grandparents couldn't pay off.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to inherit that, and they're going to continue living poverty, not because they want to, but because they have no other choice. The job they're working at, you know, 45, 50 hours a week, doing overtime, still isn't affording mortgage and food, let alone utilities, let alone the luxury of having cable. Or even something that's becoming a right, as technology progresses, internet.
Well, I'm going to tell you, along with that mortgage part, that goes along lines with what's happening with gentrification, too. They make everything it's so hard to afford everything, and people can't afford these mortgages. So the homes and property that black people do own in these neighborhoods, they can't afford to upkeep them. So people come on in and they swoop them right on up from under them. The bank's working against black people and everything. It's really, like you said, it's really disheartening to see black people not seeing what's happening to black people. It's, you know, it's the blinders are really thick on there. They're really keeping, you know, them from seeing the reality of what everything is.
It's funny because I know someone who's white. Her toddler son is black. I mean, I don't think she really likes white people and all that stuff. But she was on her Facebook page talking about gentrification, how she doesn't like it. She was like, she has friends that live in these neighborhoods. She was like, and she does not want to see her friends lose their homes that they grew up in, houses that she's grown up in and gone over there and, you know, spend the night. She said it's not fair for them to lose it. She was like, when they're working hard, she was like, and they're just going to up the rent and take these houses from under her friends' parents' feet. And a lot of people are speaking about it. People don't realize. When like Harlem, like Harlem was black people didn't want to live there, but now we got Starbucks. They got Starbucks in every corner. Those mom and pop stores are now boutiques.
Right. And it's got to the point where because of the fact of the way that society is, it's made where, you know, we value that the more that we look like, you know, what your typical white neighborhood looks like, the more accomplished it is that we are.
Right.
I know we're starting to run out of time. Not exactly, but I wanted to make sure, Khalil, is there anything else that you wanted to add? You haven't spoken a whole lot.
Well, no, I like where you were headed before when you were talking about solutions. You know, that's always my big focus.
Mm-hmm.
And that message you guys are just, you know, kind of putting together, I think that's something we really have to find a way to get out there, you know, to make sure people know that the things that you see in your neighborhoods are not just the result of some bad DNA that you have as black people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're in war. You know, things are being done to us. The list that you guys ran off was horrendous, and it wasn't even complete. You know, there's a long list of additional shit we have to put up with, even just economically, you know, to survive in this country. So that when you see entire neighborhoods, you know, struggling, it's a reason for that. It's not that we're lazy. It's not that, oh, if we just found our bootstraps and pulled on them really hard, everything would be fixed. There are people out there pulling on every bootstrap they can find, and none of that works. You know, so we have to learn, I guess, kind of teach ourselves to love ourselves more, you know. I'd like to always remember that our people also live in that system of propaganda that we're talking about. You know, they see it every day. They watch television. They see the TV commercials. They see the cast and the characters that are put in front of them in the stories on television. They see news reports. You know, they have internet where they see, you know, what trends, what pops up on their news feeds. And, you know, they're going to suffer from a lot of that as well. If all they ever see are, you know, black faces as, you know, suspects in murders and suspects in various violent crimes, they start to believe what they're fed. We have to fight against that with our own message. We have to find a way to combat that propaganda. The only way to combat it is with more propaganda. We have to get our message out there.
I've actually seen that recently in Delaware. Because Delaware, as small as it is, it has an extremely high crime rate in northern Delaware, and they're actually trying to do a documentary on it, something about, I think it's like Murder City or something like that, and a lot of people in Delaware are totally against it and do not want their city and their friends and their family painted like this. And they're speaking about it. They're trying to start petitions to get them to not make this documentary, to not paint are people like this.
Oh, yeah. I wish that Chicagoans would stand up a little bit more for Chicago. And, you know, I know that, you know, it's a lot that's going on there in Chicago. And, you know, I'm not, you know, trying to go against the fact, you know, it's facts that people are getting shot and everything. But, you know, the whole of Chicago is not what it is that the propaganda trying to make it. It's not, you know, that's just a tool. That's just a place that they like to pinpoint to try and keep the you know, the whole idea of black-on-black crime going because of the fact that they know that black crime pretty much has dropped so freaking much lately. And over the last 40 years, they need somewhere to pinpoint. So they're letting, like, places like Inglewood, you know, where it's incredibly socioeconomically disadvantaged, represent Chicago as a whole and black people as a whole. And, you know, that's, like you said, what they're doing there. I wish more people would push back against this crap propaganda that they're pushing forward. Rashad, yes, also, you didn't get a chance to speak a whole lot either. Kind of one before we run out of time.
Well, the conversation we've had on how white supremacy affects us economically, it's got me thinking. You know, the UN has started to look into the police brutality epidemic here in America, and they, you know, they're calling it a human rights issue. Some say they're edging closer to calling it a crisis. Mm-hmm. And basically, the right to not have to fear being killed by people who are placed there and with the intent of protecting you is basically something you should have a right to. That should be guaranteed. It's a universal human right. So now I'm thinking, should economic equality or economic security now be a human right?
Economics should always.
It should. Economic equality would help a lot.
It shouldn't. You know, we, in this country that's supposed to be the wealthiest country in the world, we still have homeless people, and we have enough homes that are vacant to take all of these people in. Like, each individual person could have their own home.
That would be socialism.
Have enough to spare.
Yeah, commie.
That would be socialism. and we just spent enough money
bad.
On one F-35 fighter. One F-35 fighter could buy a house for each homeless person. They could literally end homelessness tonight.
Mm-hmm.
It's the price of one F-35 fighter. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm just going to remind you that the F-35 fighter actually hasn't seen combat because it isn't combat effective.
Wow.
It's not entirely safe to fly yet.
Wow.
But they're still building them.
And we're still building them. We're still building tanks. You can go on Google Maps and find satellite images of just tanks sitting in the middle of the desert.
Nothing
to blow up. Just sitting there. These things could be melted down, sold for scrap, whatever, and end homelessness. But we don't.
Don't forget, the more we use up the budget, the more money we get every year.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Trust me, I know I'm still a government employee at the moment, and at the end of every fiscal year, they go, all right, if you got something left on your budget, burn it. Burn it down.
Because wow.
If you don't, we ain't getting it.
Fuck this goddamn country, man.
Yeah. But you think about the things. I would say a coworker, I was ringing up somebody, and he was talking about something about the economy, and I brought up, you know, the fact that there have been articles about schools taking lunches out of children's hands because their parents can't afford them. And he said something, and he looked at me when I said it, and I'm like, that's not right. And he was like, well, these parents should, where else, you know, they should be able to afford this. I'm like, they take money out of my paycheck to give to big businesses and capitalism when they can put them into to make sure these children have food to eat, because this is where some of them get their meals, meals a day. And,
and whether or not the parents
behind
can afford it.
Attitude, right, is irrelevant.
And that's irrelevant, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, what am I
who would begrudge a child a lunch, man? What kind of depraved human being are you?
The guy behind him was a younger dude, and when the dude was leaving, he flipped him the bird. He was like, I agree with everything you said. He was like, my wife was a teacher. He was like, I think he said, I forgot what he called the district that he worked, his wife works for. He was like, and I spend hundreds of dollars out of my pocket. He was like, to make sure these children have school supplies. He was like, children should not have to go through that. He was like, I don't care. He was like, where a child lives. He was like, they should be able to come to school, eat food, and get their education, not worry about if they can afford pencils and a book bag or a coat.
To piggyback on that, they've done studies, and there's an abundance of proof that for some of these kids, those school meals are all they get. These kids dread the end of the school year. These kids dread winter break and spring break and holidays because they know we don't know where our food's coming from now.
Mm-hmm. Do you really think the government cares about black lifespans?
But,
I mean, seriously, that's one of the reasons that they have the school system set up on a property tax system. The grants that you get for your school are pretty much, you know, come from your property taxes. That's where everything comes from. So if you have a school that's in a terrible neighborhood with horrible infrastructure where the buildings and the houses and businesses there aren't worth crap, it's not going to be that much money or anything put into that school. So they're not going to have all that extra money to feed the kids. All of that is systematic. They plan all this stuff out. I don't think anyone really puts the thought into the thought that they probably put into the shit that they're doing to us.
You know I do.
I'm on top of it. I mean, this is horrible. And before in the past.
What are you saying, Wilbert?
Yeah, I was saying, the thing is, it's so systematic and ingrained in the way our society works that people don't think about it. Like, it was designed and planned for black people to be in poverty for generations. It was a group of white men years and years and years ago in the government decided that this is how it'll work. And it's still happening today. But because it's so ingrained into the society where it's so common and so normal, a lot of people don't even think about how it started. Like, a lot of people just look at, well, a lot of black people live in poverty now, but they don't think about how it got to that point where most black people in this country are born in poverty. They see that there's a lot of crime in low-income neighborhoods, and because so many black people live in low-income neighborhoods, it seems like black people are more likely to commit crimes. But if you look at a low-income neighborhood in any demographic, you go to a trailer park, it's a lot of crime out there with all those white people. But it's because they don't have opportunities, because most of the people living in those neighborhoods are poor. And like you said earlier, a lot of crime is economic-based. A lot of crime is stealing, is robbing, is trying to get resources that you don't already have. So when people say that black people are more likely to commit crimes, that's, one, not true. The real fact is that poor people are more likely to commit crimes, and it's been designed in our society for more black people to be poor than any other demographic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've also noticed here in the area that I live, it's the coastal North Carolina area, there's a lot of trailer parks, but I've noticed that they tend to be tucked into these little pockets in higher income areas.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of like they've kind of you know, put into consideration, like, okay, this policy is going to fuck over black people, but it's going to get ours too.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to figure out a way to give them a little bit of a leg up. We can't help them out. We can't make it too obvious.
Well, in New Jersey, they have a law where every town has to have low-income housing. So you'll find plenty of, really, some of the wealthiest towns in the country have projects in them because it's mandated by law. There's a certain amount of money they allow you to pay if your lawyers are good enough so that you don't have to have projects. So I think there are like three towns that don't have low-income housing. But mostly throughout New Jersey, everyone has the same type of situation tucked away inside of these affluent neighborhoods or these low-income units. It just came from a court case more than likely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So until we break the system, it's really going to take a lot of us taking advantage of it, working together to push towards using that to help each other, because they're not going to. They are never going to make moves. I can't see white people all of a sudden changing and saying, you know what, black people, we totes feel bad. Let's give you a hand up. I don't see that happening. But in the meantime, what we can do is we can take advantage of the different things that, you know, the different resources that we have in each other. We are just as capable as any of these white people that you see going around. A pale face does not make you more capable. We have a lot of the resources that we can access. There are people that know how to get to those different things. There are people that are strategists, but it's going to take for us to, you know, start trusting each other, working with each other rather than against each other. That's why cooning is such a detriment, because that takes away from the unity that it's going to take for us to actually make it so that we can be more comfortable in this crappy system until we can break it.
Right, because ultimately
I'm sorry, but we're gonna have to go because we got about a buck and a half here before off. But
yep.
But
okay.
Before we go, just want to give you guys an update. There have been 16 people shot by the police since our last show. 16.
Damn.
Jesus.
And the total is 47 at the moment since our first episode. So. Like
that should be jarring. Like, I really need you guys to understand that that's not acceptable.
It's not. The only thing I like about the information age is that America has tried to keep this so swept under the rug that the information age and people were able to have their phone and videotape it and upload it instantly is giving the rest of the world a peek into what we have to live with every single day. That
right.
We've been living with for generations, and the fact that it's upsetting the rest of the world so much that the UN is looking into it. In a sense, I feel like it makes them, I guess, kind of look at themselves, even if it's just a slight glance.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I guess even if it's because of their ego and their pride, and the whole entire capable thing, I feel like we are more capable because they need all these opportunities and benefits to do this, while we have nothing that we still can push forward and do it. You really think about it.
You got about 15 seconds.
All right.
Or 10 seconds.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that is our show for this evening. Until the next time, stay black, keep pushing, keep fighting.
Peace.
Later.
Peace.
Yeah.
Did it end?
I think so. I think it got cut off.
Yeah, that shit cut off. Automatically, yo. It cuts off automatically. They don't give a fuck if you're talking or not.
Damn.
But let me see. I'm trying to go to my managed conference thing to see if it closed it or not. Okay.
Yeah, mine hung up automatically.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think it hangs up automatically.
That was fun.
Yeah, shit.
Man, that was a good show.
Yeah. That was a good show. Kasim's so funny because he was all nervous and everything. He was like, I'm shy. I want to say something, but I'm shy. And then once he started.
Can't stop Kyle's when he started talking.
Went off.
Really?
I was like, I was sitting there listening to him. I'm like, you go.
Kasim's a homie. Yeah, that was a good one. Alrighty, well, we'll be doing this again next week. Well, what's next week going to be, Rashad?
Next week is Young, Black, and Atheist. So,
okay, I'm not in that one.
I hope you got somebody to talk.
Because we're not in that range.
Yeah.
MC Brooks. MC Brooks is going to be on. Shay said she would come on.
Oh, great.
Oh, cool.
I wanted to get Ebony Violet on, but wouldn't be able to do it. And I knew that would be good. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to come up with some questions and have her type out the answers, and then, you know, I'm gonna give, you know, ask them the question, give them a chance to answer, and then I'm gonna read off her response.
Right. Okay.
I keep up with her, and the shit she tells me is mind blowing.
I know. That's my baby. That's my daughter. I haven't really talked to her lately. She, you know, been kind of MIA. I have been talking to her so much
today.
At one point.
Huh? She texted me today.
Oh. I talked to her for a second today.
Real shit? I was at fucking base legal. I was talking to the base lawyers like, yo, can I adopt a kid from another state if they're in a fucking situation? How can I?
Right. That's what I'm saying. I wish I promise you, if I had the means to, I would get her. I want to rescue her, and I want to rescue Teray.
Yeah.
Teray, you know, it's some people that's in our group that are going through some shit, man, that are, like, really valuable people. You know, not to say, you know, if it was, you know, just some other person, but, I mean, these cats are going through.
Yeah.
And it hurts when you want to do something, but, like, your hands are tied. You just, like, watching, and I don't know what the fuck to do. Because I would love to be able to get her out. But she constantly was going back and forth with her mother, and then going to her father's house, and her mother, I think, is verbally abusive to her. I don't know. She never told me about physical abuse.
Hmm.
Is she being physically abused? Did she tell you that, Rashad?
No, she did not. And I honestly think she would tell me, because the shit she tells me, I'll be like, oh my God, I'm finna drive down there. I'm finna go kidnap. I'm finna go to jail.
Right. I understand that.
I feel you.
It's personal.
She went dark for a minute a while back.
Mm-hmm.
She was nervous as shit. And then when she popped back up, she was like, yeah, they put me in the hospital again.
Poor baby. I feel so bad for her, man.
And now she having to deal with her mega coon sister cooning, and then on the top of that, she's saying, you know, mental illness ain't real, and it's just demons, and a shaman and all shit about a Hyundai.
We definitely need to do a show about mental illness in the Black community, because that's something that we don't deal with.
Yep.
Yeah, for sure.
And I need Sierra Joy on there. We need Sierra Joy. I need her on there. And who else is it that I know can talk about mental illness a lot? If I can get Avi on here, she can talk a lot about it too. Aviana. That's something that definitely needs to be talked about, because a lot of, you know, we try to pray the crazy away too. That's, you know, that's what they, you know, say, you know, we got to, like, oh, ain't nothing wrong with you. You know, that's a demon on you. Some dumb shit like that.
Oh, this is interesting. I just got a comment from one of my white friends here. Say she was listening to the show.
Mm-hmm.
She liked it.
Oh.
Wow.
Probably, because I'm pretty sure there was a couple of fuck white people at some point.
Oh.
Heather was on, so there were definitely fuck white people.
Yeah, most likely.
With Heather on, there's fuck somebody going.
Yeah, that's definitely going down.
I'm not exactly censored.
This week it was the government. This week it was the government. Last time it was it was white people.
Yeah, yeah. Just straight up fuck white people.
Usually white people. I did say fuck coons too.
Yes.
So
you got a nice little list going. So.
Fuck coons.
You know what?
Fuck white people. Fuck the police.
And fuck the government.
Fuck the government. Fuck America. Black power niggas.
If we can only put that on the shirt and sell it, because niggas will be scared to wear it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They will be.
I'd wear a shirt and it could be listing going straight down from the top. White people, fuck the police. I'd wear it with pride.
Yep.
Well, let me tell y'all, I went to Sam's Club the other day with my Not Your Respectable Negro shirt on. That was funny.
Sure. Even my shirt that just said she was black before it was fashionable to be black used to give frowns. That was great. It was wonderful. Oh, what used to be the best part of it is when you get the white people that want to pander to black people, like, you know, I really like your shirt. Like, well,
shut up.
Right. Your ass down. Oh, but did you see that Motherland shirt I had on, baby?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, yeah, I was getting frowned out about that, too. I had a couple people stop and step back and look at my shirt, and I'm just standing there like, and? Bitch.
Yeah.
Fuck you gonna do about it?
Yeah.
Because it's a picture of Rashad. It's a lady with an afro, and it looked like she's pregnant, but it's like the it's going into Africa. It says Motherland on there, so, yeah. It's pretty cool.
Like a dope shirt.
Yes, I like it. Mm-hmm. I got it from, I can't even, damn, what was the name of that fucking company? It was black-owned. It was a black-owned company last Black Friday? It might have been the one before that when I was, like, really pushing for the blackout. I bought a whole bunch of stuff from a whole bunch of different black businesses, and I was promoting it on Instagram. I had a nice following going on Instagram, but I was pretty ho-tep then.
Oh, yeah.
So I stepped away from Instagram for a minute. I'm like, okay, I got to kind of, you know, wait, and then maybe I'll come back de-ho-tepped. My pineal gland back glazed the fuck back over.
You silly.
I know. Yeah. So this is good. I can't wait till next week to hear Shay and everybody on.
So, yeah, that should be a good show.
Yeah.
It should be funny.
I think it'll be a good one.
Yeah.
I hope. Mm-hmm. I hope. I at the same time, I'm kind of hoping that like it don't really get really dark, like the kind of dark where people go like, "Did you know that was gonna happen before you get on?" Like, type of get messages afterwards.
Right.
But. I guess Kenzie is going through this is a bit of an advantage there because now I know what to expect and then we can't.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's no shock factor on my end anyway. Because then they'll know I'm not prepared. So.
Right. Yeah. I hope it doesn't get there. I think. Well, you're going to hear quite a bit of hurt because, you know,
yes.
You know, being young like these kids are and not being, you know, a part of society as normal, how it normally is, especially, you know, subscribing to atheism, that's some lonely shit. And, you know, going through those pubescent years and everything by yourself is hard. And I know Shay and... them, you know, they really going through it.
Well, that's one of the reasons they like the group so much.
Because
mm-hmm. amongst their peers, you know, they don't have a lot of interaction as much as, you know, they'll talk about the stuff we talk about.
You know, I see it a lot, not a lot as much as I used to see it anymore now that we're out of the old VA. But I would see somebody, you know, really get shit on and then, you know, they, man, that's really fucked up to say, blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. And then somebody be like, well, it's Facebook. You shouldn't take it so seriously. And I used to tell the admin in there, too, like, yo, this, I keep saying, you know, it needs to be a safe space. And they just told me, nah, that's never going to happen. But I was like, yo, this is legit. People's, like, fucking sanctum. Like, they are going through shit. They're going through the ringer. Like, some of these motherfuckers are, like, suicide constantly in the back of the head.
Mm-hmm.
And they're coming to us, you know, we're that little ray of hope. So once you start having people coming after them, and this space that's supposed to be a little ray of hope,
right,
we're fucked. you just fucked them over. Mm-hmm. And then it will be the first ones to be, oh my God, no, if something happened to them.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
What the hell?
So, I mean,
yeah.
I mean, it's not that bad. I mean, I live with my wife, you know. It's just us. We both atheists. So if I want to be like, fuck Jesus, I can be like, just walk into the next room and be like, hey, Brittany, fuck Jesus. Yeah, fuck
right.
Jesus. That's it. Go at it.
That's funny.
Hold on a second. Let me call you back in 1 second.
Okay. Well, I got to go too.
All right.
All right. Well, I will talk to y'all later.
All right. Bye, Rashad.
Bye.
Bye, babe.
Here. I think I'm smoking.
It won't let me hang up. Shit. There it goes.